good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So to start off with, what evidence do we actually have to suggest that Russia has committed war crimes in Aleppo? It's a very big accusation.
Well, one of the points that has been made is that the nature of the aerial operations to assist the Assad regime, which is the, of course, the government officially in power, and a lot of the bone of contention here centers on his regime, is that Russia has been assisting Assad to target various, of course, targets specific to be it Islamic State, be it the Syrian rebels. And broadly speaking, in the process, it has been said that civilians have been affected and specific humanitarian targets have also come in the way, so to speak. And so that's the bone of contention here. And, of course, those strikes started in the collapse of the ceasefire arrangements that Russia and the United States initially made.
So UK Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, he has actually come out and openly admitted that the West has failed to place pressure on Russia. How does that come into play? How does the West's failure to place pressure on Russia come into play?
Well, I mean, Boris Johnson has come up with certain positions on this point, but the reality is that the Western powers in this sense don't have the upper hand in the Syrian conflict because the Russian forces have, from the start, made it very clear that they are backing, the forces of the Assad regime and they want Assad to stay in power. The Western part of the bargain in interfering in Syria is more complex and convoluted. And that involves trying to back so-called moderate Syrian groups, which are, to put it mildly, not very moderate at all. So the result is essentially a hodgepodge of alliances and backers and proxy wars that are taking place in Syria, which make the situation very difficult to control. So the statement about pressuring Russia is a, it's an odd one in a sense because it's a futile one.
So what sort of strain, I guess, has this placed on the relationship between the US and Russia? I mean, they're not exactly notorious for getting along very well.
No, it's a continuation of the tension between, of course, say, the United States and various Western allies and, of course, Russia. It's different visions of power. It's different visions about how the Middle East is meant to look like. And I think... And don't forget that, of course, there's the ongoing tensions in terms of what's happened in Ukraine and what's happened in Crimea. So generally speaking, it's Russia flexing its muscle and being seen as a traditional power hungry state, if you like. And, of course, if you look at it in detail, it's more complex than that. It's true that they have been flexing their muscle, but it's in very strategic ways. They've been doing so in a very limited way because they're involvement with Syria is a decades-old one, which simply is reflected by the support being provided by Putin to Assad's regime.
So the Security Council, it's had the same five permanent members of the Security without any changes since its conception, one of which is Russia. Does the fact that Russia holds such a significant place in the UN make it actually difficult for the UN to hold Russia accountable?
Well, yes, but that's true. That's the nature of the permanent five, and that's, as you rightly point out, it's a legacy, if you like, of the inception of the United Nations that the permanent five would have the so-called veto power. But do not forget that it's the same thing. It works the other way that when the shoe's on the other foot. So, for example, whenever there's an interest that supposedly touches on French matters, then there will be a veto exercised by the French. Anything with Chinese interests, the veto is exercised by China. And don't forget that whenever there is a resolution put on the table in the UN Security Council regarding, say, actions of Israel, it will always fail because the United States exercises its veto power to back an ally. So it follows with the other powers as well, and it's not just Russia that does this.
And just before we do let you go, looking into the future, I bet the million-dollar question, do you think that anytime soon we are going to see Russia and the US play a part in stabilising Syria?
Well, I just hope that that's not the case. The reality of it is that historically they have been, of course, at loggerheads and have been engaged in, sort of at the cold level of conflict for a long time, and a lot of this is a reminder of that. But I do envisage that at some point, there's the old writer from the 19th century, Alexis de Tocqueville, who spoke about the mutual interests of the United States and Russia, and hopefully, at some point, this may change. Certainly, if Donald Trump gets into the White House, he's made very clear he'd like warmer relations with Russia. So we'll have to see how that pans out.
Yes, it's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Beany, thanks so much for joining us on The Daily this morning.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.